27:56. I don't know, Kelly, you signed up first. Do you want to do first? I guess you're for it, so come on up. And you're for it. I don't know. Yeah. And Peter, is it dual? Is that correct? Or
dual,
okay.
And actually, Peter knows probably more about it than I do. So.
Well, come on up and you guys can... Peter, you want to go ahead and give us your name and tell us what we're doing here?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Minnis and members of the committee. Peter Duell, on behalf of Oregon District Attorneys Association and the representative of that group, Ray Dark, this particular bill in the district attorney in Jefferson County. I have participated in a work group that was involved at the time of the first enactment of this legislation. Last legislative session continued on as a member of that group. I believe that it's an accurate statement that the content of this bill before you is substantially a work product and recommendations out of that work group that had been ongoing on the matter of some revisions to the juvenile sex offender registration statutes as they pertain to relief from registration provisions. I think the focus and significance of the proposals here is an expansion of the provision for relief dealing with adjudicated youth prior to the enactment of the last legislation on it to encompass youth that were adjudicated so that they have the ability to petition for relief as do the youth adjudicated subsequent to the effective date last legislative session. And additionally, a provision to expand the availability of the petition to youth adjudicated out of state that are transferring in state. The district attorneys believe strongly in the importance of registration, not only the importance of adult sex offenders being registered, but also youth adjudicated for sex offenses to be registered. You're well aware that there are provisions currently in the juvenile code that allow adjudicated youth on sex offenses to petition for relief. The provisions and modifications to that law, as I stated, would expand that to probably most all of the youth that are adjudicated for a sex offense in Oregon now under the provisions of this bill. The provisions that are recommended here that have to do with the time of adjudication have set out a modification so that there's essentially a waiting period of approximately 2 to 3 years after the youth is off of supervision. The discussion behind the importance of that provision is that oftentimes the most telling aspect of the risk of the youth and the risk to public safety of reoffense is informed as much how that youth does after they're off of formal supervision as it is when they're under a supervision program and in treatment. So what modifications contained in this House bill change as to one critical aspect is setting out for a period of 2 to 3 years, maximum period of 5 years once the youth is terminated from probation, an opportunity to apply and petition for relief.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Just to clarify, when you say a maximum of 5 years, are you saying that if the youth does not petition within that five-year period, then it's impossible to have his name removed from the registration?
The petition, the opportunity to petition is available up to 5 years. It used to be, in the current law, the window closed 90 days after the termination of supervision. So once they were off of supervision, the juvenile case was closed. Current law sets out that they would have to file that petition within 90 days of the termination. This law sets out two windows, essentially beginning at a period of 2 to 3 years. There's a window for application of a petition for relief, and then another window from the period to 3 to 5 years.
And if the person doesn't meet those deadlines, then there's no opportunity for relief, and that person's name is always on the register.
Essentially, it's written, yes, that's correct.
To follow up, Mr. Chairman, what's the rationale for having that period? Well, why have a deadline?
The difficulty becomes with the staleness of the record. I believe that in large part the various constituents around the work group table believe strongly that the issue of whether or not a youth is appropriate to be considered for relief needs to be informed in a large amount by the freshness of the record that's available to the court in looking at that issue. The longer you go out with that, the more difficult it becomes to maintain a significantly fresh record of the nature and charges and circumstances surrounding the adjudication, how that youth did on the period of time that they were supervised, and other factors that may be available to the community and to the court within that 2 to 5 year period, that the longer you go out, the less of an ability there is in order for the participants in the system to bring accurate and fresh information before the judge. Also anticipated, I believe, Senator Ringo, is that the youth are going to obtain notification of the opportunity for this process. And I think that we contemplate in most cases the actual filing of the petition on most of these youth are going to be around the time they, or beyond the time they reach the age of majority, which is about 18, which would be 18 years old.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
How does the person present evidence? It says they have the burden of proving that clear and convincing evidence. What kind of evidence do they bring?
Chairman Minnis, Senator Ringo, in terms of the burden of proof, for the first period of time in that 2 to 3 year window, the state has the obligation and has the burden of proof. The evidence would be presented, and I think the statute clearly sets forth that there's a rather broad consideration for the nature and type of evidence that's available. It's just like in many other court proceedings that the party having the burden of proof in the first 2 to 3 years would be a state of Oregon to bring history of the record of the adjudication, testimony from treatment providers, probation people that are supervising the case, evidence of the nature of the crime, possibly from records of the investigation, testimony from the victims affected by the crime.
Right, just testimony of the victims of the crime, that goes to whether the person is rehabilitated or not?
It goes to a couple of the factors that the court can consider that's set out in the laws that currently exists. The impact of the crime on the individual.
Just a thought, Mr. Chair. I fail to see how that has any connection to the rehabilitation issue.
I believe the statute is written contemplates again the viewpoint of the court being able to take in the widest breadth and consideration of the facts, nature, and circumstances of the offense, the history of that offender, not only from the date of the incident all the way through probation, termination of probation, supervision, and then the follow-up period of a minimum of 2 years, a maximum of 5 years, how they do in the community. The relevancy of that is that I believe in dealing with individuals who commit sex offenses, the complexity of whether or not they have successfully been rehabilitated and the risk to the community is of a low enough level is a result of a court's consideration under this statute of a multiplicity of various factors that do touch on the nature of the offense. That informs, I believe, if my understanding is correctly, the prognosis of that youth, the likelihood as to whether or not, if they haven't reoffended at a certain time, whether there's a significant risk of reoffense at a later date. That is a lot of information that I believe comes in more appropriately from the perspective and purview of the treatment and treatment individuals, the professionals involved in the work of treating sex offenders. And the current state of the art and status of various testing protocols and instruments that are utilized to comment on a prognosis of whether or not any particular sex offender presents a risk of reoffending and what degree that risk is. And a significant or an important piece of that is the information about the nature of the original offense, the impact on the victim, the posture of the perpetrator, and the posture of the victim.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions, Senator Starr?
I know that in our society today that teenagers are having sex at an amazing level. Most of these are not where they're adjudicated as statutory rape. But we do get lots of youth caught up in the system, seems to me, who are having sex with younger females and adjudicated. It's very troubling to me that we're sentencing 16-year-olds under the crime of being labeled a sex offender, locking them up for long periods, and yet they're multiplied many times that many that never get reported. So I think this relaxing of the requirement to get relief is important. And I, following on what Charlie has been talking about, I don't know why in many of those cases that we have any time limitation at all. But I'm going to be supporting the bill. Appreciate very much your testimony.
All right, Senator Ringo.
What is the purpose of the registration?
Chairman Minnis, Senator Ringo, I'm not, although working on this the last 3 years, I can't speak as a expert directly to the origins or the purposes of the registration of sex offenders, but I think it, from my perspective in adjudicating and prosecuting these kind of crimes, I see registration as important for a couple of significant reasons. One is the fact that our communities and my constituents, and I believe your constituents, have an interest in being informed and being aware if there are sex offenders in the community and in their neighborhoods.
Is that because of threat maybe posed to young children, people in the community?
There clearly, I believe, have been cases, and I think everybody recognizes that the initiation and the major interest for sex offender registration nationally came about in light of some very significant cases. There are, unfortunately, a number of cases that in Oregon that present similar concerns of adjudicated individuals on sex offenses not having been successfully rehabilitated and having repeated their offenses. I think registration in some ways is a mechanism for the community to have sort of an informal probation on that person, a participation of the community and an ability for parents and families and others responsible for kids where we live to participate in that very significant issue of public safety. I think the other thing that psychologically, if there's an individual that is registered as a sex offender, it also impacts and this is more of a personal belief, but I think it's like an informal probation. They are aware that they can be watched, that people in the community will know about their behavior and have a concern and pay attention to that behavior. It's a way that our communities can take more activity in protecting their own safety and protecting the interests of their kids. And lastly, registration comes in use in law enforcement purposes. We've gotten a number of contacts of police officers that may come upon a domestic violence situation or out on a alcohol-involved call or an MIP or an adolescent party. They'll, as normal routine, run information from police records on those individuals. As you're probably aware, the factor of a sex offense registration is kept on the law enforcement data system. So if an individual is contacted by the police officer and they come up as a listed sex offender, that police officer will know. I've had at least a handful of cases where we've had adjudicated sex offenders that had contact with them. They've been in association with adolescent females, clearly against the terms of their probation. The reason we've been able to take some action under probation on those individuals is again because of that information being available that otherwise wouldn't have. There wasn't a registry on those kind of informal contacts or formal contacts from police related to other crimes. The information may not be available that that sex offender is out there in violation of their prohibitions and being involved with other underage children. I think the ability for the probation and law enforcement community to be able to access that information is an important function of the registration statutes, particularly when we talk about sex offenders.
Yes, continue.
I guess as a comment, I agree with Senator Starr that it's troubling to me that we are prosecuting teenagers for sexual activity that really is not predatory, and yet it's caught up in certain Measure 11 definitions and other definitions, and it puts them on a sex offender registration that is very harmful to them, and they clearly don't pose a risk to society. I certainly support the bill, but I guess I just want to register that and hope that as you look for further changes, that you at least consider who we're putting on there and what damages we're causing by that.
Chairman Minnis, Senator Ringo, less than 30 seconds if I could respond to that. At least my experience in prosecuting adolescents as juveniles under the laws that require registration, the vast, vast majority of those cases in my experience is adolescents that are 3, 4, 5, 6 years older that are choosing very troubled younger females that are either on a runaway status or having significant difficulties at home. I think there is a big concern that the more mature teenager that is out of sync socially in a different social developmental period of their time or being involved with younger girls that really don't need to have older boys sexually involved with them. What we see is there's a correlation with these young women, or young girl adolescent victims of sex offenses, and that they have oftentimes a multiplicity of problems of drugs and alcohol, abuse at home. And my perspective is that these are important because we have a pattern of the older adolescent boys that are, in a sense, preying, and I differ with you because I believe they prey on the vulnerable younger adolescent girls. Thank you.
Kelly, do you have anything to say?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Sky, legislative representative with the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And Ingrid Swenson with our organization worked primarily on this work group with Mr. Duell. And we support this legislation, although I do appreciate the perspective of Senator Ringo and Senator Starr, in that there are some troubling things about it, some compromises that needed to be made in order to be able to pass the legislation. It does fill in holes that were left by the bill in the previous session, that being allowing offenders who were adjudicated prior to January of 2001, the effective date of the last bill. It allows those people to apply for relief, and it also allows offenders who are adjudicated out of state that move into this state to apply for the relief as well. We certainly would have liked to have had a longer window of time, but understand the difficulties in presenting evidence to the court at these hearings. And so that was one area that, in the shifting of the burden after a certain period of time, placing that burden on the youth to prove to the court that they have been rehabilitated. And those are things that we would certainly prefer weren't there, if they were part of the compromise.
Kelly, I really don't understand this bit about the stale evidence. I mean, it seems to me that, I mean, you could have somebody that for some reason or other doesn't act quickly. They're angry at the system, they're angry at the world, and they don't bother to get their record cleared. And 10 years later, they decide, you know what, now I do. Doesn't it make sense that they have at least some opportunity for them to try to remove their name from the sex offender registration?
Chairman and Senator Ringo, I very much agree with you. In our experience, and I've practiced at the Public Defender's Office for years, in our experience, it's going to be people who are poor and maybe just are unaware or not able to get it together to apply within that window. Again, that is a compromise that had to be made in putting together this piece of legislation, and Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, as well as other juvenile and children's advocates, will certainly hope to be able to bring modifications to this bill to the table at a later date. But I think that, just to follow up, I think that one further concern along those lines is that the longer a person has been off of supervision and has not offended, the more likely it is that they are not a risk to society. So it does cut both ways, and I think that you're very correct, Senator Ringo. The other problematic change to the bill that had to be added was taking out the right to counsel, and it's a concern. It's something that, again, in times of not such a budget crisis, that we would like to be able to provide counsel to these youth, because as Senator Ringo pointed out earlier,
when the burden is on the youth to prove to the court that they have been rehabilitated and they need to present evidence, it will be difficult, and we can all imagine how difficult that would be for someone who doesn't have much education, doesn't have the funds to hire a lawyer. So that's an area that we would hope to revisit sometime in the future. But again, we as an organization feel that passing this piece of legislation putting this process in place to allow people to apply was more important than being able to provide attorneys or being able to proceed without a filing fee at this point. And one further point I wanted to follow up on that Senator Ringo brought up, and that is in talking about the whole purpose of registration and the need for registration, especially as to youth. There are different levels of offenders, and they're what you have commonly heard of as predatory offenders, and those are offenders who treatment providers have determined are at risk or at great risk to reoffend, and those are offenders who actually can be, the state police can go out into the community and notify about. They're also referred to as notification level offenders, and the number of those offenders, they're the percentage of all of the sex offenders who are actually notification level or predatory is actually a very small number. And there, if we were to, as a group, go through the roles of registered sex offenders, I think that we would all agree that there are people on those roles that do not present a risk to the community. And it's particularly those people that we feel it's very important to have the opportunity to apply for relief from the registration requirement. Nothing further.
All right. Other questions?
Just one.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Skye, I'm glad you raised that one question about right to court-appointed counsel. That's the first thing I saw, and it raised an alarm bell with me. Is that a negotiated compromise as well?
No, not as part of the work group, Chairman and Senator Walker. The that actually was amended into the bill in the House because the fiscal was so large, and we made a decision that it was more important to actually have the bill passed if we could get the fiscal down, and that was the easiest way to get it down.
Well, that's too bad, because I agree with you. Some of these people don't make a lot of money, and that shouldn't be a burden to them having the opportunity to clear their record as a sex offender, because as the comments have said this morning, that's clearly a very severe thing to have on your record. And if you are a sex offender, so be it. But sometimes, as we've seen this morning in the discussion, some people clearly are not, but they just got caught up. So I'm disappointed, but I understand.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman.
Dan, is it Malin or Malin? I always pronounce your name wrong, I think. Malin or Malin?
Malin. Sure.
Malin.
Thank you.
Why don't you come up and share it with us here? And I do have a question here on page 3, line 42. It asks that certain things be produced, and it says the police report relating to the sex crime for which reporting is required. Is that referring to a single police report or all of the relevant police reports? My experience is such that you usually have a multiplicity of reports. Does it make any difference?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe there's a section of the ORS as far as statutory interpretation that says the singular also means the plural.
Okay.
I can find that.
All right. As long as the singular also means the plural, I'm happy.
I'll find it.
Okay. Great. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman Minnis, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Malin. I'm the manager of the Oregon State Police Sex Offender Registration Unit. And thank you for the opportunity to speak about this bill. I represented the Oregon State Police on the committee that worked on this bill, and Oregon State Police does support it. Peter Dole and Kelly Skye already talked about some of the aspects of the bill and how it changes the two avenues for relief and registration for youth in the state of Oregon right now. Those who have to wait the 10-year period and those who must petition within 90 days of release from supervision, it kind of ties them all up into one plan that offers everyone the same type of relief from registration. And we support that because it's a lot easier to keep track of youth's petitions and relief from registration based on one consistent plan. For those who have the 90-day opportunity right now, the Oregon State Police hasn't seen any petitions successfully brought for those that have to petition within 90 days from release from supervision. So if this bill takes effect, it will push those petitions out to at least 2 years from the end of supervision, and just like Mr. Dole stated, provide an opportunity to see how the youth, how his behavior is during that period of time that they're not actually being closely supervised. We think that's a positive thing. The questions of the purpose of registration, of course, juvenile registration is clearly up to the legislature. In Oregon, it's mandated for adults by federal law with the Wetterling Act, but clearly it's up to the legislature here in Oregon for juveniles. And speaking solely as a parent of three teenage daughters, I find it a relief to be able to check and find out whether or not the young persons my daughters are associating with have been adjudicated for a sex crime. It could certainly make me or impress me to move to protect my daughters somehow. And there was a question about the staleness of the record. Within the sex offender registration unit for out-of-state offenders, for the adults, I routinely have to request copies of arrest records and court documents to support assessments of out-of-state offenders. Many states have retention schedules that include the destruction of documents after a certain period of time, after 7 or 10 years. So obtaining some of that documentation to support these petitions could be pretty difficult. Washington State, for instance, has a 7-year retention schedule. So it makes it rather difficult to obtain some of that supporting documentation, which would be used in these petitions. And juvenile records are even more difficult to obtain. So I just wanted to make that point. The Oregon State Police supports the bill, and we would like to see it passed. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate the work of the folks that worked on this thing. And I guess I'll just say, as a detective that works in this area, registering sex offenders, I agree with Senator Starr and Senator Ringo. It's to some degree troubling to try to sort out who the bad guys are and who the bad guys aren't. It's an issue that's going to be in front of the legislature for many years to come, because I think the more salient question asked by Senator Ringo is, what is the purpose of sex offender registration? And at some point, I think it's going to get to the point of being ridiculous in terms of the number of people are registered, and then trying to correlate that with their potential risk or threat. And it's just, as far as I'm concerned, a conundrum at this point. I've got folks that I'm registering that, you know, or haven't been arrested or rearrested in many, many years, but their offense was an A felony or a B felony that precludes them from petitioning. So it's troubling, because many of these folks that come in and talk to me, they have responsible jobs and they're rational people who don't get arrested and made a mistake when they were young, and so it is troublesome. But this makes more rational what we did last session, I think, in Senate Bill 370. Sounds like a thing to do. But I want to flag it for next session. any input to keep working on this issue. So, and one of the issues we have not resolved this session, and I assume we would have more discussion on, was the issue of the determination of juvenile predatory sex offender status. And the budget has taken the center stage this session, but if you recall, one of the issues we discussed last session was how do you determine the predatory status of a juvenile, and we didn't have a reliable instrument that would help us determine that. And yet that was in the works, there was research ongoing, and I'm not sure if that's actually been accomplished yet or not. So maybe we need to flag that for the interim too.
Mr. Chair, so you'd like those issues on that or into more agenda?
I would actually. I'd like to have some continued discussion on this because this whole area is evolving. And I'm looking at the Oregon State Penitentiary population with what, some one-third of 12,000 inmates are all convicted sex offenders. It's a huge population, and 3,000-4,000 people in the Tri-County area or more that are registered sex offenders. And then the other issue I brought before the committee earlier, where the police are doing the registrations and the probation parole people are basically running these people around with a hook in their nose trying to get them to cooperate. So anyway, with that, we'll do a work session. See if we can move this thing along.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
First of all, I'm really glad that you got this on the continuing agenda because I agree with the other people on the committee and in the audience that this is a work in progress and we have a long ways to go. But I would move House Bill 2756 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick moves House Bill 2756 and Grossed, I believe it is, to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Additional? No discussion? Any objections to the motion? There are none. The motion passes. And Senator, who wants to carry this? Nobody is.
I'll carry it.
Senator Starr. Thank you very much. All right.
Absolutely.
What else we got here? Let's see.
Mr. Chairman.
2420. Can I do 2811? Can I just get those amendments adopted and get the bill out of here?
Okay, Mr. Chair.
And I don't want anybody from the Department of Agriculture even talking to me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2811 comes to you from Representative Shudley and Senator Schrader. And basically what the bill does, expands the definition of minimum care with regard to non-ambulatory livestock animals for the purposes of criminal statutes. And what it basically says is that minimum care, I'm going over to page 2, for a livestock animal that cannot walk or stand without assistance, humane euthanasia or the provision of immediate and ongoing care to restore the animal to ambulatory status. And you have before you the -83 amendments, which creates a task force and game file on Newcastle disease consisting of 7 members appointed by the Director of Agriculture. The task force will study and make recommendations, et cetera, et cetera. The task force may develop legislation. And the disease, other things it will do, it will report on disease testing, disease reporting, legal fowl rearing, euthanasia methods, legal fowl training, and other standards of practices. And then on the next page, it talks about members of the task force are not entitled to compensation or to reimbursement of any expenses incurred by them in the performance of their duties. And I believe the task force would be run by the Department of Agriculture. And the reasons for emphasizing on the next page is to ensure that this bill has the minimum fiscal impact, the amendment, excuse me.
Thank you very much. Committee might remember the last time we had this bill in front of me, the committee, I went completely nuts. and Jared Broadfoot, I've since met with the director, and we've had some discussions of the A3 amendment, I think, as a result of some
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burdick.
I would move the -83 amendments to House Bill
2811. Senator Burdick enthusiastically moves the A3 amendment to House Bill 2811. Discussion? Any objections? No objections. Motion passes. Thank you very much. Senator Burdick, would you please enthusiastically move this thing so I can
Mr. Chairman, because of the other provisions of this bill, I enthusiastically move House Bill 2811 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves House Bill 2811 as amended before the Senate with a due pass recommendation in a tepid and enthusiastic paradox. Further discussion? Any objection? No objection. Motion passes. Thank you very much. I will carry this bill.
My daughter wrote me a note that this should be a felony, not a misdemeanor.
Which one?
2811. It is a Class B misdemeanor for a person to intentionally, knowingly, or blah, 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 to not take care of an animal. She says it should be a felony.
All right. 2727. Floyd, are you here on 2727?
Yes.
Is that right?
Why don't you get any questions?
Oh, okay. This is a work session. I think we had Gary. Okay, 2727.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2727 requires property owner to give notice to law enforcement agency that has taken over control of the owner's property because the property was used in the manufacture of illegal drugs and is contaminated. The owner plans to enter the property for purposes of inspecting and decontaminating the premises. No amendments. No amendments in the House.
Okay. This is a work session.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bray.
I move House Bill 2727 to the Senate floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves House Bill 2727 unamended before the Senate with a D-pass recommendation. Discussion?
Nothing to add to this bill with such a good rewriting clause.
I'm trying to have mercy on Floyd.
We have a few more that we can work on.
What's the rewriting clause?
Relating to crime.
We have plenty more of them.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? There's no objection. The motion passes. And who wants to carry this one? Sorry. Senator Walker gets to carry it because she's enthusiastic. 2422.
Chair, members of the committee, creates a crime of failure to yield a traffic patrol member. Currently, if a traffic patrol member is in the crosswalk and the kid's in there, then it's an infraction, a violation because of the kid, but not because of the traffic control member, and this would fill in that glitch in the law. Comes to you from Representative Backlund.
Have an amendment to this thing?
No amendments, Mr. Chair. No amendments in the House.
There was an amendment dealing with a flag or something. There's supposed to be an amendment regarding traffic patrol member and how you distinguish it.
I guess we'll have to put it over. We don't have it. You did mention it.
The question was, how do you discern who the traffic patrol member is?
I mean, could you go on for a hold for a second? I do remember that discussion. Could I just check the office file?
Okay.
Okay, great.
We'll be in a 5-minute recess. Run, Bill, run.
I'm Bill Ryan.
How you doing today?
members of the committee, you have the dash one amendments in front of you as carrying a flag or wearing something that identifies a person as a traffic patrol member.
Mr. Chairman, that kind of perks up my imagination. Something that identifies a person as a traffic control member.
What happened to your bill, Senator Burdick? What happened to your bill earlier in your crosswalk?
Oh, it's law.
It's law? Oh, okay. Because I was thinking if it wasn't, we could do something here.
No.
Always on the constitutional.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I have to admit, we had difficulty writing this particular amendment. For the same reason that Senator
it's kind of like that thing about you'll know it if you see it.
That's right.
Like the judge is going to have to at least have something in their bonnet that says, yeah, this person is obviously a traffic control guy. I mean, they're going to be wearing some kind of vest or something. Hopefully.
Well, yeah, it says it's carrying a flag or, so they could be carrying an American flag. For a Canadian flag.
But it's something that identifies the person as.
Traffic control.
So if they're out there holding a menace as a fascist sign, no, that's not going to do it.
Oh, I have to put that one away.
That's a you can run over them and get a free pass. Okay. We're in work session. Anybody want to move the dash one a minute before
Chairman.
I say something?
I'll move the dash one.
Thank you. God bless you. Senator Burry moves a dash one amendment to House Bill 2422. Discussion? Any objections? None. Passes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burry.
I move House Bill 2422 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burry moves House Bill 2422 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? No objection. Motion passes. And Senator Ringo, this looks like a tough bill.
You know,
if you can handle this one.
Let's see what I can do with it.
Can you handle that one? Okay, great. And that should be all of the business before the committee. Tonight is our little function, so I look forward to seeing you all. And
Mr. Chair, I just want to let the committee know I will not be there tonight. It is my 19th anniversary, and my daughter graduates from 8th grade, so.
So
wish I could be
there. Well, yeah, so much for your priorities.
Right.
All right, we understand. Thank you very much.
Do you know writing files?